With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. Critically analyzing global affairs, this is the Hervoy Moritz Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Thank goodness it's the end of the week. I just uploaded my latest podcast for Geopolitics and Empire with Richard Gage of 9/11 Truth, and he'll be joining me on TNT as well next month. He's doing great work. And apparently, we had the news yesterday. I was just catching up regarding Julian Assange, and his appeal, I guess, was rejected, which now paves the way for extradition to the U.S. And his wife, Stella Assange, posted a statement saying that Assange will make a renewed application for appeal to the High Court. The matter will then proceed to a public hearing before two new judges at the High Court. And they remain optimistic that they will prevail and that Julian will not be extradited to the United Soviet States of America, where he faces charges that could result in him spending the rest of his life in a maximum security prison for publishing true info that revealed war crimes committed by the freedom-loving United States government. And Russian Prime Minister Mishustin came out and said something very interesting, unnerving. He said, quote, "They are trying to blame Russia for all the problems and responsibility for coming global famine, while experts believe root cause of food inflation is miscalculation in the energy policies of Western countries." Let's rewind. He said the coming global famine. Whoa. Has he been listening to people like Michael Yon, who's been warning of a global Holodomor? That's kind of freaky. What do they know, these global elites? Ray Dalio, billionaire investor, just posted 2 hours ago on his LinkedIn. That seems to be his primary source of where he posts stuff. And I listened to Ray Dalio. He's talking about, the title of his post was "The Latest Steps Toward Civil War, Connecting the Dots." He says, "To me, watching what is now happening in the U.S., United States' civil political conflict is like watching the same movie that played out many times throughout history, with just the people and the settings being different. It's remarkably like the French, Russian, German, and Chinese examples, and many other civil wars and or nonviolent revolutionary changes in domestic orders." And he basically concludes, he says, "Because the country is so fractured with people on all sides inclined to fight for what they want, it seems likely, but not inevitable that we will go into some sort of civil war." Fun times. Not really so fun times. The UN, apparently, at Rockefeller Center in New York this week, replaced all 193 country flags. They've replaced all the world's countries' flags, 193 country flags, with all LGBT flags. That, I guess that's the flag of the one world government, the world empire, is the LGBT flag. I mean, it's crazy. And then I saw a clip just before joining, I think this is in Canada. Young Muslim kids stomp the pride flag as their mothers cheer them on. Yeah, this was in Canada. So we are really going to head to head with the beast. They're shoving this down our throats. They removed my three countries' flags. I've got three countries. So they removed, those are my identities, and they replaced it with LGBT. That is insane. There was a fascinating article on Newsweek from Josh Hammer, op-ed that says, "We are Jews against Soros." Very powerful piece. He starts by saying George Soros is an evil man. In fact, he's one of the most evil men currently shaping American and Western politics and global events more generally, and just he goes on and on to say it's in no way anti-Semitic to criticize George Soros, who himself worked with the Nazis to carry, you know, to steal wealth from Jews. I mean, they just they clothe themselves in their evil, and then they project it. They project it on us. So that was fascinating. And article and Panda and Dr. Kent Lindley are pointing out that the WHO is now recommending that babies' lives may be ended up until the moment they emerge from the birth canal without delay whenever a pregnant woman requests it through its updated abortion care guideline released in 2022, who expects all member states to implement this policy without regard for most human religious and cultural beliefs. Again, there you go. One world government. We're going to replace your flags with LGBT flag, rainbow fascism, shove down your throat. We're going to mandate in all 193 countries abortion up until the millisecond of birth. Probably they'll add later, like you can, you know, kill your baby infanticide afterwards if you want. They'll probably do that the way things are going. And then, yeah, interesting end of the week. And a reminder again that you can listen to TNT Radio archives if you ever miss any interview or show, but you can also stream live through the mobile app, TNT Radio app on the smartphone. It's over at the Apple and Google Play stores. You can just go to the website, tntradio.live, and hit the Listen Live button. And we also stream live on YouTube, Rumble, and Odyssey as well. All the bases are covered on TNT Radio.
Giving you what you want.
I want the fact.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
According to RT, Russia Today, Presidente Jose Biden's administration has conceded that Ukrainian military units may be suffering heavy losses of troops and U.S.-supplied weaponry as they ramp up attacks against Russian forces in the Donbass region. Here with the story, joining me now is TNT Radio News producer Adam Clark, a.k.a. Ruckus.
Orale. All right. So this is great. I was digging into this. It might be a little bit of a spin on RT's sake, but Kirby did appear to at least admit that things might not be going so well for the the world stage's heroes right now. So speaking in a CNN interview on Thursday evening, White House National Security Council spokesman John Kirby, who has one of the longest titles that I have to report on a fairly daily basis. He said he was reluctant to discuss specifics on casualties amid increasingly fierce fighting near Artemovsk, known as Bakhmut in Ukraine. Asked by host Wolf Blitzer about reports of severe Ukrainian losses of men and equipment, he deferred to Ukrainian officials to comment on such details. Kirby said, quote, "This is war, though, and there is some heavy fighting around Bakhmut, and there's fighting elsewhere along that front that arches all the way from the Donbass down to toward Zaporizhzhia. And certainly it's to be expected that there could be casualties in this increased fighting," end quote. Kirby made his comments amid reports that Ukrainian forces began their long-awaited counteroffensive on Sunday and came under withering Russian firepower as they made multiple failed attempts to breach Moscow's defensive lines. Russian President Vladimir Putin said on Friday that Ukrainian forces had suffered far heavier casualties than the typical 3-to-1 loss ratio typically expected during an offensive. Ukraine's forces, according to the Russian Defense Ministry, have lost thousands of troops and dozens of Western-supplied armored vehicles and artillery units, including, specifically, 1,240 soldiers and 39 tanks within a 24-hour period. Wow. The ministry pegged Kyiv's troop losses at more than 3,700 in the first 3 days of the counteroffensive, compared with 71 on the Russian side. Again, this is coming from Russia, which is probably why Ukrainian officials have dismissed claims about its losses as Russian propaganda. Kirby said the Biden administration aims to enable the Kyiv regime to launch attacks on Russian forces whenever it wishes. Quote, what we're going to be focused on is making sure that if and when and how President Vladimir Zelensky wants to fight along that line or on any other line, that he's got the support he needs, not just from the United States, but from 50 other partners. And of course, this support usually comes in the form of cheddar. Biden vowed on Thursday to continue arming Ukraine for, quote unquote, as long as it takes. And U.S. lawmakers have already approved an eye-watering, staggering $113 billion in funding for military and economic aid to Kyiv. And he said he expects members of Congress to continue dishing out that sweet, sweet cheddar, backing Ukraine's efforts to drive Russian forces out of its territory. And he wasn't kidding. I'll get to that in 1 second. Blitzer noted a warning from U.S. House Foreign Affairs Committee Chairman Michael McCaul, Republican from Texas, that it will be, quote unquote, very difficult to get congressional approval for more funding if, quote, Ukraine isn't making gains out there on the battlefield, end quote. Asked whether that assessment is correct, Kirby said the administration has all the Ukraine funding it needs through the end of its current fiscal year on September 30th. Oh, well, that must be true because I think I just heard the news today, this morning, that the U.S. Department of Defense announced an additional $2.1 billion in security assistance for Ukraine. So I don't think that anyone really is paying attention, anyone really cares about the whether or not Ukraine is making gains. It's a nice question there, Wolf Blitzer. But Kirby said, quote, we've had terrific support from both chambers of Congress and both parties over the last 15 months. And the president has said he expects that support will continue because members of Congress, they understand what's at stake here, certainly inside Ukraine, but also on the European continent, end quote. Well, I'm glad, Kirby, that members of Congress understand what's at stake here, because sometimes I really don't understand what's at stake because I don't believe they're telling us the truth. How about you, Hervory?
Of course, they are not telling us the truth. And, you know, I'm still, in some ways, I'm of the mind where I've got no idea who's winning, Ukraine and the Western world or Russia, because it's such a fog of war and disinformation for both sides. And, you know, we always get back to that angle of the great, this is sort of like a simulated, I mean, obviously it's a real war, but its goal seems to be, as some have said, restructure. You know, it's a great reset to restructure the global system. It's a systems changing war, as this Fiona, some person recently gave a talk, this globalist elite. And so it's hard to figure out what's going on. But as you say, things don't seem to be going well from the Western side. And I read a few articles, like one was discussing how some of the weapons that were sent, was it from the Germans or from NATO to Ukraine, were so old and not maintained. Just using the weapons themselves were dangerous, could kill the people using the Ukrainian military using those weapons. That's not a good sign. And again, I'm trying to look at the bigger picture. And, you know, something, a video I saw from today from Russian Prime Minister Mishustin, which is also kind of unnerving. He just nonchalantly says, you know, he's talking about how they're blaming Russia for all the problems and responsibilities for the coming global famine. What? You know, a coming global famine? That's news to me. What? So, the general trend doesn't look good. And somehow I lost this story I had somewhere related to Xi Jinping and China. But I mean, my view is that, you know, elites want war. So by hook or by crook, somehow through Ukraine, they're going to take us to it. But, you know, further thoughts, Ruckus?
Well, I think there is a lot to this this chokehold on the world's food supply, because Ukraine used to be considered the breadbasket of, I might be misquoting here. I thought it was the breadbasket of the world, but it might have been the breadbasket of Europe. I can't remember which one it was. But people forget all that. We've got this grain deal thing that's still in the news that's hard to follow. Build Back Better, this whole concept. Again, I can't escape this idea from videos that I had seen of this discussion or plans, supposedly, allegedly, reportedly, to build like a massive smart city in Ukraine, of all places. So I don't know how much of this all comes together. But again, that line that Kirby said, that members of Congress understand what's at stake here. If you ask them or you see them on TV, everyone's like, oh, well, yes, the democracy, the fate, the state of the whole world. No, it's got to be more than that. We're what now, $115 billion in? This is a lot more than just protecting one country's independence or democracy. Obviously, you crazy people have some bigger scheme going on, and I want to know what it is, and I want it to stop. So there we go.
We all want to know what it is. And just a side note, I think I just came across, I did a little bit of my own research today, and I just posted a short comment on Twitter because I've been reading articles about how there are these debates now between Europe's position with China and related to Russia and the rest of the world. And some European technocrats are saying, you know, we're not the U.S. And I just, you know, it's really simple to understand what they're trying to do. The EU was financed by the CIA and the State Department. And there's a 1939 plan drawn up by Strait, a guy called Strait, for an Atlantic Union. I just found an academic article just published a month or two ago about this, saying, he imagined as a community of transatlantic elites centered in and on the U.S., this Atlanticism continues to dominate Washington politics today. So basically, his idea is to create a union of the North Atlantic democracies that includes Canada, USA, and the European countries for a more perfect union. And so it seems like that is what a lot of this is pushing towards, integrating Europe and North America, which I guess would be the foundation for world government. And then they will try to eat up the rest of the world. So, you know, that's Cecil Rhodes' old plan. Anyways, we'll catch up with you, Ruckus, next hour. We got a great first time guest, John Gusty of the redpillrevolution.com. Check out that website and the book they have written out there. Feel free to call in and we'll be right back.
Politically Incorrect on TNT Radio.
What is going on with the governments of our world ceding their authority to an unelected body, the WHO?
Well, I had a full briefing on the WHO treaty and the amendments to the international health regulations. They've got to be both looked at the same time. They both come from the WHO. Basically, for those who don't know, the WHO is an arm of the United Nations. It's based in Geneva. It's been in existence since about 1947. Its remit is to help world health, and it's got a charter, and that's all pretty benign. Until now, its recommendations have been advisory, but it's looking to get more powers. All their recommendations would be mandatory. Governments would have to abide by them. It gives the Director General, Mr. Dr. Tedros, who's a particularly dubious background, the ability to call a public health emergency of international concern, which they would take sweeping powers over all aspects of our lives. It's really pretty frightening.
Weekends are better when you spend it with Mike Tennessee and Richard Carson on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
We don't talk at you.
Blah, 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 blah.
Shut up!
We talk with you.
What do you think of this idea?
Let me tell you this.
What's wrong with this picture?
From government overreach to the global pandemic, TNT Radio invites you to join us as we separate facts from fiction, truth from propaganda, day in, day out.
Call the open line anytime.
In the U.S. and Canada, call 1-888-201-6425. In the U.K., call 033-024-1026. And in Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-310. Free speech has a home on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
After over 30 years in the entertainment industry working behind the curtain for some of music's biggest names, John Gusty turned his attention to health and wellness in an effort to help his wife heal from what was originally diagnosed as multiple sclerosis. He soon realized that the same deceit and profit motive that plagued the entertainment media was even worse inside the medical industrial complex. As a devout agorist and champion of individuality, he now devotes his time to producing content that celebrates the spirit of sovereignty in all aspects of life. The website is theredpillrevolution.com, and the book is of the same name, which you can purchase, called The Red Pill Revolution. Welcome to TNT Radio, John.
Oh boy, how are you, brother? Man, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me.
Well, thank you as well for coming on. And I'm just going down the rabbit hole that is your work and very much enjoying it. And I don't know why I have not heard of you before. And, you know, we're very much on the same frequency.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know. I'm kind of more of the, there's different approach. Everybody has different marketing approaches, and mine is more, let's just build it and they will come, versus, you know, whoring myself out on social media to try to get people's attention. So, you know, like I said, I'm taking a more modest approach, and it's working. It's working for me.
Yeah, that's fine. And let me just read a quick quote from the intro of the book that you co-author, where it's written, quote, "The first goal of the Red Pill Revolution is to invite you to take a fresh look at the world you live in and to question how well that world works for you. Our intention is to help you break out of that conditioning so that you can make free choices as a powerful, responsible, sovereign human being," end quote. And so, you know, I feel like I began that process in my teenage years. You know, initially it was a slow process. It's different for everyone, right? You start going down the rabbit hole, you read certain books, you watch documentaries. And then for me, as time went on, you know, the Red Pill Revolution in my life sped up. And so maybe we can start there. You know, maybe if you want to talk about you, your experience going down the rabbit hole, as well as the whole philosophy of the Red Pill Revolution, the book, the website, the movement, and so forth.
Yeah, man. Well, like, okay, so just for some reference, I graduated high school in 1983. So that kind of gives you a timeline of where I am age wise. So
that's the year that I was born. So
well, there you go. But it's all relative. But like, yeah. But what I have to say will apply to you as well. I and my peers, you know, I'm in my mid 50s now. So I and my peers have never lived a day. I mean, we were literally born into the pop culture meme that politicians and corporations were never your friend. They were, you know, I mean, I've never lived a day not knowing that. I mean, I grew up in it. It was, like I said, it's become a pop culture meme. And so I don't know that I ever really had one defining red pill moment, because quite honestly, I never trusted politicians and never trusted corporations. And it was very easy to see that. I mean, there's examples daily, hourly, to not trust politicians or corporations. And so, I guess maybe the really defining moment for me, I have led a relatively healthy life, you know, haven't spent any time inside hospitals or any of that nonsense. I eat good. I drink good water, get good light. Try to live a pretty healthy life. But my lovely wife, Dawn, 20 plus years, when we first got together, she was originally diagnosed as having multiple sclerosis. And she has not, in full disclosure, she hasn't taken a step on her own in about 15, 16 years. She's been confined to an electric scooter. And we don't have enough time to go into that entire story, but a lot of the damage that was done to her was done by the medical industrial complex. And when I'm kind of a digger, you know, like when I get into a subject, I just dig, I find what I need to find. I ask what I need to ask and kind of learn my way forward on any subject. And when I dug into her situation, trying to, you know, she's my wife, she's my girl. I want to help her get better. And it became very apparent when I first started interfacing with the medical industrial complex that nobody in there is really looking out for you. You know, I mean, I think everybody, you know, listening knows that when they go to a quote unquote doctor's office, you're going to spend, you know, 5-10 minutes max with this guy, and he's just pumping through, guy or gal, sorry, I don't want to be sexist. You know, they're going to spend 5-10 minutes with you, and then they're on to the next person. And, you know, I mean, you can't even catch up on your email in 5-10 minutes, you know, so how hard could they possibly be delving into your health and wellness situation? So, like you said in my intro, I come from a lifetime of the entertainment industry. So I'm very, very well acquainted with the, you know, the art of smoke and mirrors and trying to manipulate people into, you know, buying this or signing up for that or going here. And, you know, and that's how the whole entertainment industry works. It's all, you know, just dangle the carrot and get people to do whatever you want them to do. And, that's one thing if you're trying to get people to, you know, go to a movie or something, but when you're playing with people's health and wellness and, you know, in some cases their lives, it's just a different game. And so I quickly saw that more than anything, I'll tell you, it's the ego inside the medical industrial complex is unlike anything I've ever seen. You know, and I've sat in the same room with, you know, Kanye West and Dolly Parton and Taylor Swift. I've seen ego. You know, I know what ego is, and nothing against any of those people, but you know, they're certainly capable of understanding ego, but I've never seen ego like I've seen it inside the medical industrial complex. So one of the co-authors on the book was my wife's doctor, Dr. Jeremy Ayers. He's based in the UK. I'm based west of Nashville. And as we went through her health journey together, we just became very like-minded, realized we had the same ideology. And the origin of the book came as a result of just many hours, hundreds of hours of conversation. And we started writing the book fourth quarter of 2019. And I guess we all know what happened next shortly after that.
And, if you just want to hold that thought, John, and that's a great place to take a pause for a moment, because we got to jump to the headlines with James.
Good news, people.
Now, TNT Radio News.
Come on. Here is your headline.
This is James O'Neill with a check into today's headlines. Former NATO Secretary General Anders Rasmussen said this week that individual NATO members could send troops to Ukraine if the alliance fails to provide Kyiv with security guarantees at an upcoming summit in Vilnius. A Russian man died after being mauled by a shark on Thursday off of one of Egypt's Red Sea resorts. The UK will need to build at least 15 cities the size of Birmingham to cope with rising immigration figures, according to a new think tank report.
Don't miss a thing. Be sure to download the TNT Radio app from either the Apple App Store or Google Play so you can easily listen live to us anywhere, anytime. Available right now to download. Keeping you up to speed on TNT Radio.
We continue our conversation with John Gusty of theredpillrevolution.com and the book as well, which you can purchase from there in physical form, digital. They also have a Spanish translation, The Red Pill Revolution, which has also been updated for COVID-19 or COVID-1984, as I like to call it. And before continuing, COVID-911, you know, I just posted, I did an interview with Richard Gage of 9/11 Truth. And he also, you know, 9/11, COVID-911, it's all connected. But before continuing, I thought I'd just mention, I saw, I follow a lot of people's work. I follow a lot of people. And Gareth, I saw you were in Gareth Icke's show recently. I was subscribing for a while. How was that?
It was cool. And, you know, I got to spend, I was a regular attendee. I don't know if you're familiar with the Anarchapoco conference that takes mm-hmm. place every Friday, February down in Acapulco. But I got to hang with his father several times there. And I'm going to champion anybody who just forwards the art of free thought and free speech and critical thinking. And so his father is a, you know, just a, obviously a pioneer in that. Say what you will about the man, but at least he, you know, he speaks his mind, and you got to respect that. And so, no, Gareth, man, he's got a good thing going. He's a very gracious host and had a good time on that.
I'll respect anyone who's banned from the entire European continent.
Yeah. Like, David must be doing something right.
Yeah. And, you know, I haven't made it. You know, back in the day, I used to write under a pen name just for fun for Jeff Berwick's Dollar Vigilante for a little bit. And I've never made it out to Anarchapulco. I think around the same time, a couple months back, I did attend the Derek Bros's Greater Reset here in Morelia. It. Yeah, in Morelia. Mexico, and I think I'm going to try to make it out next year to Anarchapulco. When was the last time that you went?
Well, obviously the, you know, the silliness of 2020 and the whole scamdemic kind of messed up the beauty of what that event was, because, you know, I mean, I don't know about you, but I will never get on a commercial airline again, ever. And it just, you know, I don't know. I've got a thing about industries that try to require you to do things that, you know, will kill you in order to partake in their product. So, you know, nonetheless, I still support the conference, but I'll do it remotely. Someday when, I don't know, either I have my own plane or we get, you know, the Uber version of, you know, flight, you know, then I'll go back there. But
I think in their projected future, we won't be flying anymore and we won't have cars. It'd be a long drive for you. I guess you could drive, but I get what you're saying. You know, I can't quite go as extreme as you because I've got 3 citizenships and passports, and, you know, I like to go back home to Croatia at times. But I had that same, you know, I refused to take a PCR test. So I've never taken a PCR or injected myself with Pentagon juice. And so I had to wait a long time before I could, go anywhere. And maybe on that theme, big pharma. I was going to ask you, because part of your book discusses great illusions. And for me, there are so many. You know, we're talking about big pharma. There's, you know, the wars in the military industrial complex, media and propaganda, the new world order and their plans for world government. But, you know, we're touching on one of them right now, big pharma. And I too kind of went down that rabbit hole. I just started at some point saying, I'm not taking any more vaccines or doing surgeries. You know, I've mentioned this before. I was in the Peace Corps in Mongolia. And at that moment, I had a toenail fungus. And I go to my conventional doctor, these people that we're talking about, the egotistical folks. And they're like, oh, there's nothing you can do. And I had the medic in Peace Corps in Mongolia was a Vietnam vet. Really cool hippie guy, kind of like as you kind of painted yourself. And he's like, oh, take some Vicks vapor rub, which the main ingredient is a natural herb, you know, eucalyptus. And you just rub it on your toe. Just keep doing it. And my fungus went away. It was amazing. And once you learn about, you know, these natural health, it's like there's no going back. And so, you know, your further thoughts on that as well as, you know, COVID-1984.
There's a reason why John D. Rockefeller inserted himself and pretty much killed any natural, you know, homeopathic thought and turned it into, you know, the allopathic system that we have here. And the allopathic system's only got 3 things in their tool belt. You know, they're going to cut you, they're going to drug you, or they're going to burn you with radiation. That's all they do. It's surgery, drugs, or radiation. And none of those options are good options ever. There is always a natural solution to any medical problem. But you mentioned illusion, and I think one of, you know, the different there's so many illusions out there today that your average person has to deal with. But I think the biggest illusion, and it's certainly the spirit of the book, is just the illusion of the religion of statism, you know. And for those listeners that don't understand that term, statism, that's just, you know, and a lot of people don't think of statism as a religion, but you know, that's the belief in the higher power of the state. Here in the United States, it's the belief in the District of Columbia. And, you know, and there's illusions within the illusion. It's like they give you this illusion that there's only 2 sides. There's the red side or the blue side. And, you know, there's people like myself where, you know, I don't take part in the religion of statism. So I don't look at it as 2 sides. There's it's like there's one church and they just have the blue people on one side of the church and the red people on the other side of the church, and they spend eternity arguing with each other, but they're all part of the same religion. And I'm not part of that religion. And I think, you know, I don't know, there's many, many examples. And if we had more time, we could go into them. But, you know, look at like the topic of gay marriage. Look at how many people fought over gay marriage. And what you really had was you had this supposed one side going, we got this privilege and you're not allowed to have it. And you have this supposed other side going, but we want this privilege and we're going to fight for it. Okay, well, but both sides are fighting over the fact that this commercial entity called the state gets to certify your personal relationships. I mean, if you step back and you think about it logically, who wants a commercial entity certifying human relationships under any circumstances? Gay, straight, marriage, friendship. I mean, you know, are we friends? You know, I mean, do we have a piece of paper telling us we're friends? It's mind blowing that so many of us walking around are walking around in this illusion that this commercial entity known as the state has this self proclaimed authority over so many aspects of our life. And the book is really aimed at helping anyone in various stages of coming out of the illusion of statism and going, hey, look, I know something isn't right. I mean, I'm in my mid-50s, and that particular religion, the red and the blue people, they haven't made us healthier. They haven't made things less expensive. They haven't made schools more efficient. We're not less busy, less distracted. It's not cheaper to earn a living. We're not more self-sufficient in any way, you know, shelter, water, food, general cost of living. So the church of the red and blue hasn't made anything better. And it's the same, you know, you get into your mid-50s and beyond, and you just start looking at these patterns, and it's every 2 to 4 year patterns. And it just starts to get, you know, I don't know, it's like an abusive relationship. And I think the book's goal is to wake people up out of that abusive relationship, or if they're already awake, make them realize they're in an abusive relationship and just leave that abusive relationship. The state doesn't love you, and they never did.
It's funny. Now, I've come to that place myself of like no political solution. COVID really, you know, was the atom bomb, because up until then, you know, I would have maybe just the minimal amount of faith, and maybe some mayor or governor there or politician there can change things. And, you know, myself as a Christian, it's like you realize even Jesus was talking about like there's no political solution when he told Pontius Pilate, I can come down with my angels and overthrow the Roman Empire.
Yeah.
But that's not the point. He didn't do that. It's like it really doesn't matter. And then you're sounding a lot like, I had a guest on a couple months back who was also, I just saw a guest recently on Gareth Eich's program, common law advocate Brandon Williams. So he sort of blew my mind in terms of the research he's talking about, as you're referencing DC and the corporation, and Etienne Boissier Squared. I'm not sure if you've read his book, but he presents all over the place. I got to hang out with him in Mexico a couple of months.
Oh yeah, no, both those guys are outstanding, doing outstanding work, and it's important work, because I don't think enough people out there, good, I mean, and I'm not casting judgment, but like there's good, well-intentioned, well-meaning people that don't even realize that, like, you and I have never lived a day when we've actually had government. Government, I mean, at least here in the States, people will argue, but at least since the mid-30s, there is no more government. The government became these commercial corporate entities that name themselves, you know, the state of Tennessee, or, you know, the District of Columbia. These are commercial entities. And, you know, to be ruled over by a commercial entity is a bit crazy. If you step back and you think about it, I mean, you know, you would not, I don't know, if you were driving down the street and you saw some blue lights and pulling you over, and then you noticed that the car pulling you over was a Walmart police officer, you'd be like, what are you doing, man? I'm not I'm not even in Walmart, you know. And I think that is a, you know, it's a silly but at least a solid analogy, is the state, really all of the power of the state is self-proclaimed. They don't have the power that they exist on paper, and unless their paperwork and your paperwork jive, and it doesn't, because how many of us have a, you know, have written down and have a contractual agreement with the state? They've got lots of these tacit agreements, you know, tacit meaning that you were tricked into signing something that you didn't realize you were signing. But I mean, yeah, I don't know. Again, if there's one goal of the book, it is to help people out of that religion of statism and realize that, man, we have so much power as individuals. And the biggest power that we have is we have the ability to say no. You can say no to anything, anything. And people go, well, that gets rough. Well, you know what? Life is rough, but if stuff means something to you, then you stand your ground, and that's what digging in is all about. And it's fairly easy to say no. I made it through the entire events of 2020 and beyond, like you. I never took a PCR test just out of respect for Kerry Mullis, who, you know, the inventor of the PCR method. He even said it's not a test. But I never put on a face diaper, and I certainly never shot myself up with any MAGA jabs or Brandon boosters. At all. And it wasn't just, you know, I didn't just avoid those injections. I haven't been injected, you know, no one's putting anything in my veins. You know, I nourish my body with natural stuff, and it served me well. And I don't eat chemical foods. I don't drink chemical drinks. I don't soak in chemicals, and I'm certainly not injecting chemicals in my veins.
Yeah, that reminds me of what one of my not long ago podcast guests said. Alex Thompson, former GCHQ officer who contributes to UK column, he said, practice saying no to petty tyranny. And, you know, that includes the masks, the shots, the all that. You know, here in Mexico, I was refusing to go. The big box stores or supermarkets wouldn't let you in with the face mask. And I just stopped going to them. I went to the corner stores that which didn't care. You didn't have to wear masks. And I think towards the end of this, some places still required masks. I remember going into a Walmart here once, I think last year, about a year ago. And I made it in. I walk without a mask. I do 80% of my shopping. And there's a security guard. He tracks me down through the different aisles. You know, and he's like, you're not wearing a mask. You know, it's just like, it was absolutely like something from a Seinfeld comedy show. So Kafkaesque, unbelievable. John, we're going to have to jump to our break. Again, the website is theredpillrevolution.com. And there you can also get access to the book, The Red Pill Revolution, and purchase it and support this kind of work. And feel free to call in as well. We'll be right back.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
I wrote a blog on CFACT a couple of weeks ago about the 3Ds of climate change: deceit, distortion, and delusion. Well, let me add disgusting to that. The disgusting display was in the form of Chuck Schumer. Now, I don't think Chuck Schumer is a disgusting person. I think that he is influenced by disgusting thoughts to try to blame climate change for all the smoke in the Northeast. First of all, the origin of the fires. And this was the most remarkable thing I've ever seen. I don't know if you've seen the video. They all started at once, the clear skies, in a place that is normally cool in the month of May, Quebec, that was cooler than normal in much of the area where the fire started, and wetter than normal to the north, and not nearly as dry as what's been going on in the United States. And they all started magically at the same time. Yeah, I guess they're now space aliens, and they're working with the CO2 fairy to magically light things up, because that's what you would have to believe. And I got news for Chuck Schumer. Why don't you take a look at what's actually going on in Canada? Their springs have been cooling over the last 10 to 15 years, and that's actually been helping drive wildfires in Canada down. It's disgusting. That's the only word for it. And it ought to wake people up on our side of the issue to how low they will go to drive this point home. Disgusting, delusional, distortive, and deceptive. This is TNT climate and weather watchdog meteorologist Joe Bastardi, asking you to not be disgusted with the weather. It's one of God's greatest gifts that you could possibly have, and enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Many power grids worldwide are in grave danger of collapse from the growing amount of intermittent power sourced from wind turbines. Covering the countryside and offshore coastal regions with wind turbines is insane. English journalist James Dellingpole has described wind farms as a cancer, and that he wants to raise public awareness of just how disastrous these bat-chomping, bird-slicing eco-crucifixes are in every single respect. These remarks nail the reality of wind farms to a T. When the wind doesn't blow, there is no power. And when gale force winds hit, the turbines are shut down. It's a Goldilocks moment. When the winds are just right, the power produced is at an optimum. In reality, industry and households require power 24/7, not just when the wind blows.
The human mind is like a computer. No matter how efficient it may be, its reliability is only as great as the information fed into it.
That's a campaign promise.
Tell us the truth. Tell us the truth.
We mandate that the truth be told.
You're hearing it.
TNT.
It's our last segment with John Gusty of TheRedPillRevolution.com. And check out the book as well, The Red Pill Revolution, updated for COVID-1984 or COVID-9/11, whatever you want to call it. And you were talking about earlier commercial entities, democracy. I mean, I think it's obvious by now, we've got a global oligarchy. There's no such thing as democracy because it's the moneyed class can buy any politician or political party and then manipulate things any which way they want to get whatever result that they want. So voting really doesn't matter. At this point in 2020, I interviewed Dr. Robert Epstein, who was recently with Chris Smith on TNT Radio. And Robert Epstein, he testified, I think, before Congress, and then his wife was taken out in a car crash. And, you know, he was pointing out how Google can manipulate the vote, you know, in term by the millions any which way that they want. And so what are sort of your thoughts? And this sort of leads me to the whole World Economic Forum, Cobra Commander Klaus Schwab, as I call him, and the Great Reset Project, where they're concentrating power globally now, and they want basically a world government. They're having problems in some areas, but in others, I see them advancing, and they want to build out like this digital technocracy, which I like to call the algorithm ghetto, to control us. And so you know, any thoughts on any of this?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'll take one of those hooks, and it's the whole technocracy thing. It is. I know we are both old enough to remember a time before, you know, smartphones, mm-hmm. and life was what we got by just fine. I think we have been conditioned as a mass to think we need this stuff. And we don't, you know, we, I don't know, as a species, I mean, I think we're the only species that sets itself up the way that we do. And our setup is all based on dependency. And what other species does that? Birds don't do it. You know, rodents don't do it. Fish don't do it. You know, it's more of a collective effort to thrive and survive. And we're just not set. We are set up on a dependency playing field. And one of the exciting things about my journey for myself that I just every day I kind of surprise myself a little more is how much we don't need any of this stuff. We need water. We need shelter. We need love. We need companionship. We need food. And that none of that stuff needs to be commercially controlled. I mean, think about water, man. I mean, how many humans, there shouldn't even be we are whoever, yeah, depending upon who you want to argue with, you know, we are 80% ish water. You know, we are completely dependent upon water. Why is there a freaking paywall between water and humans? You know, in most cases, I mean, most human, even successful people, people who would consider themselves living the good life, most of them can't even get their own water without third party commercial, you know, corporate entities delivering that water to them. And so I don't know. I think in mass, we need to start thinking of that word dependency. And it's a word that comes up a lot in the book, is little by little, we can start unplugging and we can stop being so dependent. And, you know, for some people, I understand if you're sitting in the middle of a big metropolitan area and you live in an apartment, it's going to be a lot harder for you than, like, say, somebody who lives in a rural area. But it's how bad do you want it? You know, how bad do you want to be sovereign? How bad do you want to actually be a free human being living as we were intended to live? And I think far too many of us just opt out and go, you know, it's just too much work. And so I'll take the dependency route. And I'm just not, you know, I mean, you had referred to me as a hippie earlier, but I'm actually a punk rock is probably one of my most cherished music genres. And if you know your musical history, punk rockers don't like hippies, but I'll take it as a compliment. But the punk rocker in me just will not, I'm sorry, but my middle finger is flying high at all times. And if we're good and people are being good to each other and helping each other, it's all good. But if somebody steps in and starts trying to control things or starts trying to manipulate things for nefarious reasons or starts trying to make, you know, unnecessary profits or gains off of regular human existence, I can't stick my middle finger up high enough.
I mean, those are all great points. So for example, here in Mexico, a lot of people depend on Coca-Cola and Pepsi owned water
companies.
To deliver the water. And it takes a lot of agency and effort and sovereignty, as you say, to get out of the cities, which is, you know, what I'm trying to do. Of course, there's always, you know, economic issues, but there's people that I know that are buying plots of land in rural areas so that, you know, I got my goal. I'm working towards it. And in your book, you guys also mentioned what I was alluding to. I think in the second chapter, it's written, quote, due to ever more consolidation of power, we now have transnational corporations and superstates like the EU and UN, or UN, and the natural and logical conclusion of the trend towards consolidation would be a single world government. But you mentioned punk rock and rock and roll. And then, you know, we saw what happened with COVID was eye opening. We had, I used to grow up listening to all this sort of music, going to the concerts. I've been to many concerts and, you know, Rage Against the Machine was with the machine. Bruce Springsteen. I mean, you so, name it, go down the line. Brother, what's your thought on how all of these,
I'll tell you what. I was at Rage, you know, I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona. So I was at Rage Against the Machines. Their album came out on a Tuesday, the following Thursday. So 2 days after their first record came out, I saw them in a little club called the Mason Jar in Phoenix. And I actually believed those guys. I actually believed they were who they said they were. And, you know, realizing years later that they're just, you know, they're Sony soy boys. They were never independent. They were always part of the machine. And I'll take it even one step further. There used to be counterculture, you know, I especially in the music and art worlds. You know, I mean, there used to be true counterculture people and counterculture movements. And after the events of 2020, I mean, I think we all watched with our own eyes, and whether all of us saw it or not, but I certainly, it was blatant to me. Counterculture just flipped overnight and became these compliant corporate slaves. You know, I mean, who'd have thought that because a politician got up there and said, you need to take these injections and you need to inject into your veins this stuff to save you from this super scary thing that science to this day can't even prove, you know, and I'm talking science. I'm not talking Anthony Fauci or any of that. I mean, science is a discipline. Science isn't a building somewhere in the District of Columbia or Wuhan or whatever. Science is a discipline. There's a scientific discipline that needs to be applied. And, you know, I, again, who'd have thought that people like, you know, bands like Rage Against the Machine or the Foo Fighters, Dave Grohl's, well, I'd love to get that guy alone in a room for 10 minutes. They were one of the first that I saw that were not allowing people to come to their shows unless they took the MAGA jabs, you know, and I my head explodes. If you'd have told any of us 20 years ago that the state was going to come at you like this and you'd have to inject yourself with chemicals before you could go see a rock and roll show or whatever, we'd have all gone, nah, that's never going to happen. But like overnight, counterculture just flipped and became compliant corporate slaves, and I did. They're all dead to me. There's a few, you know. I mean, I think Morrissey of the Smiths is one of the few of my generation that stayed
Clapton,
true to who he was.
Clapton's
Van another Morris, one.
Van Morrison, you know, I think, yeah. But. Yeah, and I just for fun, some time to time, I check down, and I've seen Audioslave perform live and stuff like that. And Tom Morello's Twitter feed, I mean, it's absolutely atrocious. It's totally corporate. Well,
he came from the state. I mean, his parents are connected.
Harvard.
One of his first gig, was being an intern, for a senator. I mean, he's looking back on it. I'm mad at myself for falling for those guys, but you know, it's good stuff.
I don't know if you saw Nick Cave's recent interview for Unheard. He said to be counterculture today is to be a conservative and go to church. We're out of time. It's been awesome, John, chatting with you. You're welcome back anytime. About 30 seconds left. Where are the best places to find you and your projects and all that?
TheRedPillRevolution.com. And if you go to TheRedPillRevolution.com/guide, there's an anti-dependency guide there for you to download. So it's free and we ain't going to spam you. So go get it.
Very, very cool. I'll be following you guys from now on that I've discovered you. Keep up the great work and educating people and speaking out. TheRedPillRevolution.com, as well as the book, The Red Pill Revolution. I'll be right back after the break.